Bye-bye. How are you feeling?
Okay, great.
Really? So your symptoms have been very mild?
I haven't had any symptoms yet.
It's a few days now, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm ready to come out with these new guidelines. Okay. All right. So what was the debate you were having just now?
What's that?
We were picking up on where you left off.
Oh, about all the quandaries about Urea, and did he divorce, and if not, and so why did he have to David have to send him to be killed if he
right,
wasn't
right.
divorced and
part of right. So what that's what we're up to actually, where David is arranging for Uriah's demise.
Yep.
Okay, so and tragically, he arranges for it with Uriah as a sort of a trusted messenger. He's the one who delivers the letter that says what to do.
It's terrible.
And David trusts that he's not going to look at it. All right, but his original plan was just to have Uriah go home and spend a little time with his wife. You have to assume that had he done so, that David may have forgotten the whole event and finish.
Right.
But as it stands, this was not this option did not work. Right. David tries to get him drunk and still he doesn't go home. Okay. So that's where we left off. All right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that means we are up to. We are up to Pasuk Yud Dalet, Vayhiva Boker. You get it? You ever see it? Okay, we ended up last time also with a very curious Milat Mancha. That's a terminology that Nechama Leibowitz coined for a word that appears again and again and again. But David keeps sending Uriah, Lama lo yaradita, Be'el Beischa lo yarad. But when Uriah talks, he says, my men are in battle, the Aron is at war. Va'ani avo LBC. He doesn't say va'ani a raid LBC.
Yeah.
And you get it? Because for him, it's not a Yerida. Now, that could just have been a geographical delineation. David was at the top of the hill. In order to get down to where Bathsheba was, you had to have a Yerida. But this is very often in Tanakh, you see this kind of delineation. Like when Shimshon goes to Timnah, it's va'yered Shimshon Timnasa. When Yehuda goes to Timnah, it's Vayya'al. And while it may be, again, a geographical designation, as the Gemara is willing to admit, but there's also the drash that one went up and one went down. Okay, well, the best example of this, I think, is Sefer Yonah, where you have again and again and again a constant descending of Yonah in chapter 1, further down, further in, further down, right? Vayered Yafo, Vayered. It's true, the go from Yerushalayim to Yafo does involve a geographical descent. Right? But it's as if though the Tanakh is being specific beyond the geography. And even the word used for him falling asleep is Vayera Dam. The message, of course, being an important Yom Kippur message. No matter how far you descend into the abyss, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hand, his loving, gentle hand, is always. Whatever the form it takes, sometimes it's a whale, sometimes it's a storm, sometimes it's a wind, sometimes it's a boat. But Hashem has all kinds of messengers to help us with our rehabilitation and our redemption. And that's really what this story is about. Okay, the story begins with David lying down in the afternoon in the heat of the day, and we'll see how the story ends. There's going to be a full circle and a chance for redemption. For some people, the redemption does not come so soon. It has to come for the rest of one's life. The penance is served. Okay, and we'll see. We'll see how that works. Okay, so it says in Pasuk Yudalit, Vayhi baboker vayichtov David sefer el Yoav vayishlach biyad Uriah. Okay, so David has no fear that Uriah is going to actually read this thing. Okay. All right, the only other recourse is to save Bathsheba from the ignominy of being pregnant while her husband was away at war, is for Uriah to die and David to immediately marry Bathsheba. Otherwise, you know, he has to be gallant. He has to be noble. He has to save Bathsheba here. Okay. Now, this is actually poses, of course, the Gemara and Suvis points this out, and Nivamus, this poses a halachic issue. besides adultery, I'm just saying is that a man may not marry a woman within 3 months of being widowed. And yet David says in the Pasuk at the end of the story that David married her 1 week later. Of course, he can't wait the 3 months. That's the whole point, right? He wants to marry her right away so that it looks like, by the time she gives birth, 7.5, 8 months later, people will forget how long it's been, right? Okay. So Yoav's knowledge of this episode is going to give him a lot of power in David's kingdom for the rest of Shmuel Bet. Okay. Why doesn't David just kill Yoav right away? Why does he leave it to Shlomo in the Haftorah a couple of weeks ago? So Yoav probably got the message to David that if I die a violent death, there are 100 different people who know the secret. Right. Something like that. I don't know. But Yoav, look, Yoav is also quite a loyal servant of David. Except at the very end of the story in Melachim Aleph, he sides with Adoniyahu. Did the average Israelite know that David wanted Shlomo to be the next king? Did Yoav know? And if Yoav knew, how dare he support Adoniyahu? These are questions we'll have to ask later on in Shmuel Bet. Okay. Now, it is true that a king and a general have the right to put anyone they want to perform any mission they want. It's certainly immoral to put certain people in a mission where you know they're going to die. That's the Gemara later. The Gemara in Maseches Shabbos says that this is tantamount to murder. Right, but at the core, it would appear that this was some kind of a, wouldn't call it a suicide mission, but a very daring mission. And it was, let's maybe we don't have to guess. We can read the instructions. Okay, Vayichtov b'sefer lemor. Here it is: Havu es Uria el mul pnei hamilchama hachazaka v'shavtem me'acharai. Vinikava mace. See, it doesn't just say put him in a very dangerous kind of where all of the very brave soldiers send him to the mission. We'll find out later that it was a mission that went right near a very dangerous wall that was very difficult to take, and for good reason, because you don't come right up to a wall. They'll throw hot oil on you, or they'll throw rocks on you. What's the kunz here? Of course, all right. Okay, so but he says when he cover mace. I mean, you could just wink, wink. Uriah realizes what's going on. Yoav, right? David trusts Yoav too, because to give an order to your, these are not dumb people, these are very savvy people. When Yoav gets an order to put this man in a certain place where he shall be smitten and die, and then the good king marries his wife, that could be, right? David is capable of doing, he's the king. And, right? Would we call this murder? The prophet does. Oso haragta, he says.
Connect it through the rear door.
All right. Okay. All right. So let's see that these two words at the end of Pasuk Tesvav are very indicting. Make sure that he goes there and dies. He could have said something like, put him in a couple of really, really valiant missions, and let's see what we can get out of it. First, let's see. Maybe Taka, he can win a few incredibly valorous battles. And then his luck will run out after a certain amount of time. But remember, David does not have time. Okay. All right.
Rab, I'm asking you, why is there a stuma here? A stuma at the end of the pasuk. The significance of that.
Mace?
Yeah. Why is it suck?
I would tell you that Sefer Shmuel confounds the commentaries on this. Sefer Shmuel has more what's called piska be'emtza pasuk than the rest of Tanakh combined. The Torah has a few very famous ones in Parshas Petros, when right after Reuven takes Bilha. But it's very difficult. I have to tell you that the commentaries sometimes try to do something with this kind of thing. The Chabad Leibowitz often does it in the Torah, but I'm not inclined to think that there is anything we can definitively say here. All right.
What is that, Rabbi? I'm sorry. What
there is a break in the paragraph after the word benikava mace. Do you see it?
Wow.
It's called a stuma because the break has a word before the end of the line. If that word was not there, that would be called a psucha. Okay, an open break. Uh-huh. Okay, so Vayhi Bishmor Yoav El Ha'ir Vayitein Es Uriah El Makom Asher Yadaki Anshei Chayil Sham. So that's what Yoav did. Yoav is actually giving better advice than David. You get it? He didn't send him on a suicide mission. He sent him on a valorous mission. Okay? David seems to be sending him on a suicide mission. Send him someplace where he will surely get smitten and die. But Yoav says, David, listen, I have an idea of what you want to do. Okay? This is, it's not a good idea to send such an important soldier. You know, remember I told you last time, Uriah appears at the end of Kof Gimel in David's top generals. You don't send a general, you know, you play Stratego, you don't let a 2 bump into what may be a bomb. You send a 9 to bump into a bomb. Right? If you know your Stratego, right? Okay, so with the old numbers, the lower you go, the higher, the better you were. Now I heard they do the opposite. Okay, yeah. So now he said, so Yoav sent him to a place where the valorous men went. Okay, as it turns out, he's going to die with quite a few others. So it doesn't really get specific here about what actually happened. We'll get that later when the reporter tells David what happened. Okay. But what did happen immediately is that Uriah died. Okay, they fought a battle. Vayipol min ha'am me'avdei David. And Uriah was not killed alone. Makes us really feel this is quite the cover up. Okay. All right. So this is a cover up of involving the death of others, so that you know when David marries the wife of one of them, it doesn't stand out. Because if they only chose Uriah to kill, then there would be right. That would be a problem. Right. Okay. So Yishlach Yoav Vayaged LeDavid is called Divrei HaMilchama. So Yoav sent to David all of the information, all the words of the battle, and that's not told to David in this pasuk. That is a general picture of what we're about to read. Okay, David did not yet hear what happened. And it's quite a long description of how David comes to learn that Uriah is dead. Now he's trying to deflect the effects of the main purpose of this report. Yoav does not send a report home to David every day about what's going on in battle. Okay, main purpose of this report, Yoav obviously knows. He just wants to deflect it from the messenger figuring out that that's what the main part is. Let it be reported with a number of other things, and it'll be like Batal B'Shishim, if you know what I mean. Right? He'll lose the effect of what he's really telling David. Okay, so he says, Maduag nigashtem el ha'ir lehilachem. Halo yadatem es asher yoru me'al hachomo. Mi kos Abimelech ben Yerubeshes. Halo isha hishlicha alav pelach rechev me'al hachomo. Vayamas betebeitz. Lama nigashtem el hachomo. Vamarta gam avdechot riyo achitimes. And when David's anger waxes and he starts screaming at you, not that he's angry with you, he's angry with me. And he starts screaming with you to tell me what a stupid, idiotic strategy you employed to take that place. Why did you expend such important soldiers? It's such a nonsensical mission to go right near the Choma where all they have to do at the top is just throw down stones to defeat you. Right? And he brings in for good measure. That's how a woman killed Avimelech in Tevetz. Didn't matter how strong he was. And it didn't matter how strong she was. She could just move a little rock and with the gravity, it killed him. It smashed his head. Right? So why did you put yourself at such a disadvantage? At that point, also tell him that Uriah died. What's that supposed to mean? What's the point?
So that the King David doesn't get angry at about the whole methodology of the loss.
Yeah, but he wants to mention, he mentions Uriah last, right?
Just get out of jail card. Let's just get out of jail card. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you can see the Mitsudos. Says that because you see, Uriah's death is supposed to be something that's shocking. Who would put such a general? Who put such a general in such a mission? Right? Okay. So as it turns out, David does not demonstrate anger. Okay. Right? And the this is what Yoav tells the messenger, what you should say in case David gets angry with the news, and brings up stories from Sefer Shoftim. I don't know. As it turns out, David didn't say any of these things. Right, all this drama that I just mentioned. Why did you go near the wall? Those are not David's words. Those are Yoav's words saying, in case David says this, this is what you should say. Okay. All right. So, Vayomer HaMalach El David, Ki Gavru Aleinu HaAnoshim VeYitzu Aleinu HaSodeh. You see, the guy here doesn't get it. Right? The death of Uriah Hachiti is supposed to be the worst news because he's a general. Right? So Yoav tells the messenger to tell the story in a way that deflects the message of what is supposed to be the worst news to David. But in reality, it's the only news that David really cares about. Okay. And he says innocently, "V'gam avdecha Uriah hachiti meis." None of this would make much sense if we didn't know that Uriah was a general. That Uriah was one of David's top men. Okay, we needed that before, because otherwise, why would David send for him in the battle? But Uriah did not consider it unusual in any way that he was called from the front to report. Okay, maybe to strategize. Okay. So now is David's magnanimous response. V'yomer David al ha'malach, Kotomar el Yoav, Don't be angry. Right? David's about to say some words that are very famous. Which is, the sword can kill this way or that way. In other words, how can I be angry with you? Someone shot an arrow, someone threw a stone. It could have hit Uriah, it could have hit anybody. Why was Uriah even there? I don't know. Someone felt he was necessary. Okay. Kozeva implies that we can't lose hope because a general died, for the sword knows not who it kills. Okay.
This seems so random. At this time, was the Aron HaKodesh still going to battle with Bnei Israel, even in David's absence? It just seems such a random statement from King David. Our emissary for Emunah.
I think, well, by responding this way, he wants to, David is demonstrating that he's most concerned with Uriah's loss. All right, that's of course what David wanted in the first place, but it's hidden from the messenger. Right? We don't want this to ever be raised up again. David is going to actually look like a hero, making a princess out of a war widow. Right? And he tells him that kikozeve kozeto chalacherev is his characteristic magnanimity. Just get your bearings back. All right, and get back in the ring. Okay. Right. Usually in the ancient world, you only reported back to your king from a battle with good news. If it was bad news, you didn't share it. Remember the news about that Avshalom was dead. How that was received. Okay, so Batishma Eishes Uriah Kimeis Uriah Isha Batispod Al Baala. We discussed this pasuk already. This pasuk should be reduced to Batishma Batsheva Kimeis Uriah Batispedehu.
Okay. Yeah.
Bathsheba heard that Uriah died and she eulogized for him. Instead, this short pasuk with all of 10 words tells us no less than 3 times that Bathsheba was the wife of Uriah.
Yeah,
right?
It's very disappointing.
Eishes Uriah, Kimeis Uriah Isha. That he spoke of Ba'Allah. Right? This pasuk, should give us some pause about all the agadata we've been doing. But well, however you want to understand the divorce and battle and what men did then and what men continue to do today to assure that their wives don't become agunos if they lost at war. One thing is for sure is that this is still a married woman to the extent of which she's married in her heart. She'd like to go back to this man, however you look at it, because she mourns for him. She eulogizes him. She's, right? If she could turn back the clock, maybe she would do things differently also. But this is where we are. Her husband is dead. Mourning is in the heart. And it says she mourned for him.
Is there a concept of Ein Mukdam Mu'achar in Navi like there is in Torah?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's very used very liberally and generously. I'll tell you who uses it all the time in Shmuel is the Yalkut Me'am Lo'ez of Yaakov Kuli. Right? What are you suggesting here?
So could this pasuk really have been although it's written here for a reason, the event occurred earlier, so that indeed she had been already a divorced widow when she was by King David. But for the reader, the message here is essential that we have to be even extra careful about all these steps, just as a message to us. Although in effect, when we read before about Ikacheha, it could have been that that David actually married her, she was a widow, if this pasuk was really meant to have occurred beforehand.
Well, I mean, obviously, Uriah was alive at the time of that kicha. You know, he called for him afterwards.
That's why I asked whether there's a concept of in Mukta Mukha. I mean, if can we apply the same concept in Navi like we do in Torah? So we don't, even though it falls verse after verse after verse, it's possible that it could have occurred earlier. So in follow-up to what you said last week at the end of your lecture, that you know, at the end of the day, last week we should be as judgmental about King David. We always go to him.
I'm with you on that. But look, the text is about to be very very judgmental. Take a look at the very next pasuk. Right? It says, "Va'yavor ha'evel," when the mourning period was over, the assumption is... just says Batis Bedehu, however long that is. Right? It's a week, a month, let's call it a week. Right? Vayishlach David vayasfa el beso. Very, very common terminology, no? It's a little prost. You know, it says he gathered her, he collected her. Was she a collection item, collector's item? What? And he gathered her in, right? Sort of like he did with Shaul's wives and Naval's wife, Abigail, you know. David collects, you know. All right, anyway, but okay, so by Yasfal Beso, Batihilo Leisha, Batelev Lobain, and she gave birth to a child. Now that here's where that you could say some mukta mamucha, right? This means that this happened over some time. You know, the time she tells him, I'm expecting, and at the time he sends Uriah to die, is obviously a very little time frame. It's not months. Mm-hmm. At best, it's weeks, right? Mm-hmm. Right, so now it says she gave birth to a child, and vayera ha-davar asher asa David be'enei Hashem. Now, and what about earlier? So the answer is that very often in Tanakh, perhaps even in politics, it's the cover up that's considered the biggest problem. It's that David is getting away with it. Meshuva nitzachas, right?
Why can't Asher Asa David refer to all the things he's done, the whole set of what he's done to get to this point?
Yeah, of course. That's certainly what it means. But why did you wait till now to make any? Because David wasn't over. David's now totally finished with the Maisa. He gets the girl. And he doesn't even have to be punished for it because no one knows.
Right.
Except that in Israel, there's a prophet.
Right.
And if you wanted to rake David over the coals, okay, look, you know, I have here a tshuva of, I think I sent it out some weeks ago, a tshuva of the Chachmei Provence about, the way that the northern French commentaries find absolution for whatever David does here, and it's written by some of the Chachmei Provence, and they write that that it's a big mitzvah. Yes, they feel it's a big mitzvah to absolve David. But in the Kriya Timidei Pshuto, we do feel that David deserves praise for admitting his guilt, right?
Can you comment on the Targum Yonatan? Because the last three or four words, my Aramaic is not that strong, but I don't see the word ra in the Targum Yonatan.
You know what? I only have a full Tanakh in front of me here. What, read it to me.
It says, so I'll just start from the beginning of the pasuk. The avar avla ushlachta bid v'chinasha l'reita v'havat le l'yutui v'lididat le bar v'eish pitkama v'avad David kadam Hashem. So that's what v'eish
pitkama. Pitkama means the thing, like pitkam.
The avad.
So v'eish means ra in Hebrew.
Oh, it means ra. Okay. Pitkama.
Yeah.
What
David did, Asher
Asa.
Yeah. Hashem. So yeah, I think it's the same. Yeah. It's a straight shot.
Okay, gotcha.
But the fact that David takes her in so quickly, and he just looks at the end of the story like he's getting away with it. Not only that, he looks good. The papers all spun this night very nicely for David, right?
Can I ask a question? Did David feel any remorse? Does he express remorse?
So let's see how the next chapter tries to answer your question.
Okay.
Because
I have a question.
Yes, David.
Is it true that in other cultures they don't depict the sins of their heroes and kings as opposed to Judaism?
Let's put it this way. In other cultures, the king could never be challenged the way David is about to be challenged. There's no such thing. No prophet could ever talk to an Egyptian monarch and hope to live another day the way the prophet speaks to David here. There's no such thing, and it's very important to point out this difference. It's a stain on a great man's life, but you know what? You can't cancel everybody, you know, for everything. I'm not saying it's a little thing; it's a major thing. But look, when the prophet tells him, "Gam Hashem he'evir eschatoscha lo tamus," means God has lifted your sin from you, you shall not die. The implication is that you ought to die.
Right.
Just that I'm commuting that sentence. You ought to die. We don't have witnesses, whatever the reason is, but I'm commuting the sentence. You ought to die. But it doesn't mean that you're going getting off scot-free. You know, there is a din in Shemayim still. Okay. All right, that's where what takes us, Deborah, now into chapter 12, where we can see possibly a response to your question about how David feels. Right now, the Torah describes the certain punishments in terms of their not just the severity of the violation, but the severity of how you've harmed someone else. Right, the punishment for stealing a goat is you have to pay back a goat, or possibly two goats if you get caught. The punishment for stealing a sheep is that you have to pay fourfold for the sheep. Because sheep were raised for the wool and the all right. So what I'm saying is that keep that in mind. The punishment for stealing a sheep is to pay fourfold for it. David will demonstrate some knowledge of this Torah law, but he seems to go a little overboard. Let's see. Vayishlach Hashem es Nasan el David vayavo elav vayomer lo. Now, I already discussed some of this parable, because I think it was crucial to understand the beginning of the story, that this parable has a representation of David, of Uriah, and of Bathsheba. Okay. So here are the two. Ve'yomelo shnei anashim hayu bi'ir echos. There were two men in one city. Echad Ashir ve'echad Rosh. and they lived in the same city. Okay, they knew each other. Right? One was rich and one was poor. The rich man had great number of flocks and cattle. Larosh ein kol, the poor man had nothing. Ki im kipsa achas ktana, except one small sheep. Asher kana, that he purchased himself. Right, he wasn't just born in his flocks. He chose it. Vayichayeha vatigdali mo, he raised it, grew up with him. And his sons, v'imbanav, yachdav, together in the house. Mipito tochal, mikoso tishteh. This is already a little TMI, but all right. He drinks from his cup, he eats from his plate. Right? Uvecheko tishkav. Okay, this is getting a little creepy, but okay. Vatihilo kibas. Thanks. He adopted the sheep? I don't know. Vayavo heilech le'isha oshir. A passerby. The rich man may not even know him. A passerby came by to the rich man. Vayachmol l'kachas mitzono mibukaro l'asos l'oreach habalo. He refused to take even one of the many sheep that he had, one of the many cattle that he had, to give to the, now it's a guest who came to him. Now it's lo-ish, like le-ho-ish. He gets the hair yidia, right? And he gave the one lone sheep of the poor man. He gave to, now he's the ish, starts off as a heilech, then he became an oreach, then he's an ish. Of course, last time we mentioned that the rich man is David, the poor man is Uriah, the sheep is Bathsheba, the many sheep of the rich man are David's many wives, and the visitor, right, the passerby slash visitor slash ish, Gemara at the end of Masechta Sukkah says, is the Yetzer Hara. The reason why it's a Gemara at the end of Sukkah is because the Gemara there speaks about the Simchas Beis HaShoeva and some of the concomitant Kalos Rosh that often accompanied these events. Okay. All right. So now the parable is not exactly parallel, right? What would you have to say to make the parable parallel? But that would ruin the whole point of the story.
You'd have to, the poor man would end up having to die.
Right. The rich man said, you know, that was such a good sheep. I think I'll kill he'd have to kill the poor man also to make sure that he doesn't avenge his lone sheep or something like that. That he doesn't stand in the way of me having unfettered access to that sheep. Right? It's a little off because David wants to keep the sheep. He wants the cake and eat it too, you know. But here, he just slaughters the sheep and that's finished, you know, and the story's over. Right? But let's not nitpick here. Okay? If Uriah goes too far, then the point of the story is going to be lost. Because what Nasan wants out of the story is exactly what he got. For David to pass judgment on this guy. Right? David's quick, angry response is, Vayomer el Nasan, Chai Hashem, which is a lashon of a shvua, Chai Hashem asher ki ben maves ha'isha osezos. The man who did this shall die. Now, this actually gets into my book because it's a violation of the Torah. There's no punishment of death for stealing sheep. David does indeed demonstrate knowledge of Torah law by saying this akivsa yishalem arbatayim, ekev asher asor sedevar zeba al shelo chamal. Yeah, you have to pay fourfold. But they, even this part violates a famous dictum, kim le mitarabah mine, right? You don't have a monetary and a capital punishment simultaneously, right? Kill him, then he doesn't have to also pay. All right. So some commentaries say that when David said, Chai Hashem ki ben mavis ha'isha usezos, he doesn't mean he is going to die. He means he ought to die. There are enough places in the Tanakh where you see things like that. Like in Parshas Mishpatim, when it says someone's ox gores again and again, and it kills somebody, it says that the ox shall die. The gamba alav yumas. And also the ox's owner shall be put to death. No one is put to death for sin he didn't actually do. So Ibn Ezra writes on the pasuk, it really means gamba alav yumas means the owner ought to die. The owner committed a capital offense, but and the owner ought to die.
Rashi comments on David's four children. The next pasuk.
Oh yeah, that's also a Gemara. Yeah, so when he says that for the sheep he shall pay fourfold, there's the irony also. There's a dispute. There are two different opinions of how to reckon that those four. David definitely lost the baby. His baby is going to soon die. Avshalom definitely was killed. Amnon was definitely killed. Who the fourth one is a debate. Most versions of the Gemara have it as it's Adoniyahu. Problem is that Adoniyahu, while he may have died for something he did while David was alive, David outlived him. I'm sorry, David didn't die during David's life. I mean, so how can you say that David was punished? I mean, everybody dies at some point. Right? It would have to be someone that dies in David's life for this punishment. You see what I'm saying?
Rashi says Tamar, right? Tamar passed.
Right. So the fourth one therefore becomes Tamar, not Adoniyahu. The problem with that is that there's nothing in the next chapter, chapter 13, that indicates that Tamar was actually died. Mm-hmm. She says, "On the Skirpasi," and it could be that there's a tradition that says that she committed suicide after this terrible story. Okay, so but that is. That's where we get to the four things.
It's an interesting contrast between David's response to Natan and Abi now and when he gets the news of his own Chayalim who pass away. He doesn't seem to be as he seems to be much more yielding and not as angry at the loss, even though Yoav was worried about his anger. Interesting contrast.
I'm not sure that Yoav was worried about his anger. Yoav was posturing for the messenger to understand what's the Yoav is being very discreet. He's being discreet for David's sake, right? And it's all there for the reader to see. Yoav is also quite the loyal. The loyal servant of David, although that's going to change over Shmuel Bet, Yoav becomes somewhat disillusioned. Okay, Yoav has his own best interests at heart, and at some point in Shmuel Bet, we see that he starts to hedge his bets over who's going to be supported after David is king. Yoav Lachor is younger than David. Yoav is his nephew. And while it seems that they're all pretty young together at the time in Shmuel Aleph, right? And Divrei Hayamim, he's way out there, well before even before David is crowned king.
So you think David's age now is around his mid 40s?
Yeah, remember he's 30 when he becomes king. And I don't know if he is, you know, how long, you know, doesn't say in Tanakh, obviously, how long he was king by this point. But I'd say it could be in his 40s, when, you know, 40s. Now, according to Chazal, we do have a hint, is that especially Divrei Yamim, but also Malachim, refers to Shlomo as Rach v'Na'ar when he becomes king. Young and inexperienced. Right? So now, if our text seems to say that shortly after this baby died, and the baby dies at 7 days old, Shlomo was born. I don't know if we have to say that. I don't know if that's going to be necessary. Divrei Hayamim has a list of David's children, and it lists children of Bathsheba with a number of children before Shlomo.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Now, it could be a Mukdama Meuchar. It could be that Shlomo is the oldest, but that he's listed after four or five. But why? He's the one who became king next. All right? I think that, the commentaries say that there were quite a few children born to David and Bathsheba now in between. And only when Shlomo was born did God show that he was beloved, Yedidya, and God favored him and chose him, etc., etc. So again, it's hard to pinpoint an exact time period, but I think I would say David is somewhere between, let's say, 40 and 50. 50. Yeah. Okay. All right. So David pronounces this twofold punishment, death, as well as a fourfold punishment. And there are other commentaries who admit that David has the right to commute a sentence of someone who deserves the death penalty, but also to harshly judge someone on the death penalty, even when they don't deserve it. That's the right of the king. Okay.
Well, who are the four ones? There's the baby. There's
Amnon, Avshalom.
Oh, Amnon, right.
Okay. And either Adonijahu or Tamar.
Yeah. Right. And what about the four, his wives that are going to be? Who is this that's going to take care of, take his wives from him?
No, that's Avshalom.
Avshalom
is going to take all 10 of his concubines on top of the roof. Okay. All right. So, Nosan El David, so this is, perfectly timed. This is why he's called Nosan Hanavi. He's such a great, great orator, and he made David just swallow the bait, and he did. And he said that the whole point is to point his finger at him and say, Atah Ish, you are that man. Right? And then Nosan goes on a long soliloquy. All right? And the soliloquy basically is and it goes all the way, Zayin Ches Tes Yud Yud Aleph Yud Beis. Very rarely in Tanakh does one person get to speak five psukim in a row. Do your research. Look at all dialogues. Never, hardly anybody gets to speak this long. All right? And I'm not going to go through all of it. I'm just saying that, if you didn't have enough wives, you go siflach kahena b'chahena, there's nothing stopping you from your king and having the availability of available women, but you had to take a married woman, right? Okay, however you look at it, you can't understand the story to such an extent where you wonder, so what's the prophet complaining about? Mm-hmm. Didn't the Gemara and Ksuvis already answer this question? Right? There's still a plot, there's still a devious, there's still, Okay. So he tells him that you did two basic violations. One, you destroy the home, and two, you did so with the sword of the Ammonites. It was also cowardly, right? You had something man to man. Deal with it. Okay. But by using the sword of the Ammonites, so here are the two punishments. The sword shall not depart from you for the rest of your life. And two, your family is going to have some serious mess up too. You wiped out a family. Right? So is it perhaps a new couple, I don't know, whatever, but they, right? You prevented this family from you know, making its way and passing on its legacy to another generation, right? Chances are this, you know, Uriah, Bathsheba wouldn't be a Jewish name, right? If this story never happened, right? Who knows? But here it is. It happened, and Uriah is gone from the scene, but he's basically has a very, very, biblically noble reputation. And David is now going to begin serving his penance of these two Averos. And the first, I mean, some of them will be the same. The family will crack up, and the sword will chase him from the family. How do you like that? Right? Okay, so that's really, I encapsulated that five pasuk soliloquy here about all the terrible things that are about to happen because of these two things you did.
But if you compare the way Shmuel came to Shaul after he didn't kill the king of the Amalek, and now with Natan's discussion, his soliloquy to Melch David, you would think that with King David, on the face of it, that it is almost more difficult, yet David doesn't lose his kingdom, yet Shaul.
Mm-hmm. So that's the, I mentioned to you earlier, Chuvas Chachmei Provence, and they mentioned this. It's actually a Maimer Chazal, it's in the second paragraph of the Seches Yuma, V'chiyesh Masu Panim B'davar, where the angels ask God, this doesn't seem fair. So God says, yeah, because this one says chatasi and this one doesn't. So a small sin remains and a big sin can be wiped out if you say chatasi. But it goes beyond that, as Abravanel points out, is that Shaul's sins are chesronos in a melech. Right? You can't say, I really, but I wanted to do it, but the people wanted the sheep, the people wanted to go, they didn't want to wait. And the people, that's... You know, that's an avera of a king. You know, leadership means that you're able to stand up and tell the people that to do something they may not be inclined to do. You did that very well when you cut up that ox into 12 pieces and sent it out to everybody to get everyone to fight for the people of Yavish Kilad. Remember that? Right? That's not, you know, and to blame it on the people, that I can't have a king do that.
Right.
David is, you know, the sins are definitely sins of passion. He's violated Lo Tachmod. He abused his power. Right? Maybe one of the worst things in the story is that David called for a married woman thinking that she would, sure, of course she's going to come. Right? You see, look at Pasuk Yud where it says, "V'oso harakta b'cherev b'nei Amon." You killed him with the sword of Amon. Get it? Because you're king. When you tell a married woman come to the palace, she's going to have to listen, right? I mean, what would she have been punished if she just refused David? I think I mentioned last week when it says "Vayishlach lo malochim," that it's possible to understand that meant he sent the same messenger, or I'm sorry, one individual messenger a few different times, not the same one necessarily, but Malachim, he sent a number of messengers, but always one at a time. It doesn't make sense that David would send two at a time.
To Bathsheba, to get her?
To Bathsheba, to get her in the first place. Huh. What made you think that she should come to you? Well, because I'm king. I'm king, and when I say to kill someone with the sword of Amon, I expect that that's what's going to happen. So because you behave that way, that's why I'm holding you I'm holding you guilty for that. Otherwise, David can say, what are you talking about? Osar rak b'cher b'nei amu. In shliach l'dvar aveira. Which means you can't make a messenger to commit murder. You know, I know that this is something called an accomplice and all that kind of stuff, but yet, you know, because it's the king, the Gemara makes quite a big deal about this. Why the prophet saying you killed him with the sword of Amun? Yeah, you did, because you're king and everybody listens to you. Okay, I think we're going to stop with that this point today. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thank you so much.
Short break, and then we'll have the Minchas Chinuch shortly. Okay.
You're getting better and better.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Bye. Very soon.
Rabbi, you have a...
Feel well.
Bye. Bye, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Thanks, Rabbi.
Continue, Leon, Paul, Charlie.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Chava, Jenny.
Jason, Jonathan. Good to hear you.
Deborah, Sheila, thank you, Laura. Bye-bye, Jonathan.
Rabbi, do you have a minute?
I'm about to, I'm starting shortly the other shir. Yes, you have a question?
Oh, yeah, well, it's about the last week's Minchas Chinuch shir.
You want to just bring it up as soon as we start?
Well, I can't attend this week because I'm going to another shir. So I just want to ask, so last week you said, you know, if I see someone's glove, you know, someone's glove and I like them and I go to the store and I buy the same model, like, you know, it's ridiculous to say that I'm coveting someone else's property, but
of course it's not Nevera.
Right, but I didn't understand what you said right after that.
If I recall, it wasn't about the glove, it was about something that the person has a very unrealistic expectation of ever getting. Right. In other words, a pauper who looks longingly at the carriage of the king's daughter and covets marrying the girl and tries and decides he's going to spend the rest of his life doing everything he can to try to attain that ability. You know, question of what's within your not just budget but within your reality. Okay.
I always thought it meant is like you can't want that specific thing. Like not all women are equal, right? Your neighbor's wife is, you know, a specific woman. So I thought it meant like you can't like want those specific things.
Yeah, I mean, your neighbor's wife is something that you can never want. Assuming that right now she's married, but in her state of marriage, that's not that's always lo tachmo. Now the neighbor might have a donkey, right? I don't want the neighbor there, but there are other donkeys like that one. There are other cars like that one. It's a question of the reality, a question of the realism. To have some simple ambition to want to have what that person's talent, you know, what that person can do. Okay, I'm going to study like that person did. If it's something within your power, then yeah, okay, go for it.
Then why does he lift the donkey?
That particular donkey, right? There's a fine line here, but you know, because we don't want to say that everyone who has any desire for anything is ipso facto violating the Torah. No. I'll tell you, if you want to look at Ibn Ezra, it's a short, pretty short parish. I sent it out last time. Look at the Ibn Ezra that I sent out toward the end of that packet. Okay. Yes, you have to run now.
Okay, all the old ones on the page.
Yeah, this is a bit, Ibn Ezra, the second packet I gave out last time. But we're on a new topic this week. Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.